The following has been brought to you despite great danger. Please listen and heed the warning within. Godspeed and safe listening.
Good evening, my name is Shooter Jennings, and in 2010 I released an album called Black Ribbons. It featured the master of horror, Stephen King, as Will-O-The-Wisp, a radical radio show host who was hopelessly clinging on during his final night of broadcast before public airwaves were restricted to government-approved transmissions. In this show, we're going to delve into some of the great stories and tales that inspired Black Ribbons. Welcome to Beyond the Black. Episode 1. Wake up.
They say good fences make good neighbors. For you, my friend, this might be true, but you still gotta put bars on the window to the soul inside of you.
We'll be right back.
is fading. Don't believe that the planet is dead.
2009 will be one of the hottest years on record.
We've never seen a virus like this particular virus in the world. And it is spreading around the world in ways that raise some red flags.
Severe, disruptive and potentially treacherous weather is forecast to spread across the UK in the next 24 hours. The Met Office...
One of the worst storms that we have seen in years.
Now, before we delve any further, a lot of what I'm going to share with you guys is hard to believe. In fact, there's a lot you're not going to want to believe. But remember, that's the easy way out, and you got to face the often ugly truth before you're going to be able to see what's real and meaningful and not illusory and meant to keep you asleep. Some of it you may just think is insane conspiracy theorists, left or right extremes, fear-mongering bullshit. But I do know that there's more in here that's true than you probably want to think. But Black Ribbons was about an idea. The ultimate lesson to be learned for any and all of the corners of life is that love is the only truth and everything else is illusion. This quote was taken from the title of one of David Icke's books. For those of you who don't know who David Icke is, you have a lot to look forward to, and we'll get to him later. But regardless of if you agree with the views of someone as radical as David Icke, the message here is that love is all that matters when the sun goes down. Just like the Beatles' message. Love is truly all you need. Your family, your friends, your significant other, your children. These are the things that make you who you are. Not wealth, not power, not beauty. Relationships. And it's what you've got on the inside that ultimately guides you to what you deserve. But I'm rambling. So please, I apologize. My point is, suspend your skepticism. Don't try and look for this, like, hidden left or right meaning or agenda or, like, whatever. Just listen to the stories, try and debunk them, or try and believe them even. What matters is that you open your mind to think critically and not be spoon-fed the conclusions that they want you to believe. Now let's go beyond the black. In late 2007, my daughter Alabama had just been born. I had left my first and only major label deal to venture out independently as an artist. I hadn't saved any money, I was freaking out, I was scared, and I was desperate for meaning. While on a cross-country trip the next year, I was driving the whole way, and the economy fell. All of a sudden, overnight, everyone on the radio was freaking out. I was constantly tuning into local radio, and all you would hear was just that the housing markets had crashed, and the banks were going out of business. And then the bailout came, and it felt like the world was going to go into some crazy emergency state and lock down. You know what I mean? Like the United Nations were going to come in with guns and FEMA camps were going to go up and all that stuff. It was crazy, though. The stuff people were talking about late at night, the predictions, there was, and then you would get a sense of like, we're all going to be living in desperate times, and everybody was just panicking, and it was like buying supplies of water. There were riots all over the world. They called it the Summer of Rage. Now that one stuck with me. But I was always a huge fan of Art Bell as well since I was a little kid. I had always listened in my bedroom when I was like 15, every night when I was going to sleep, listening to Art Bell, Ghost to Ghost on Fridays and stuff. I always loved radio, talk radio. Anyway, so that was something that was really important, but I would listen to that every night. And on this trip across the United States, I would track on the website where I could tune into Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM, and of course George Norrie, who took over for Art Bell. And well, this one night on this cross-country drive, while everyone's freaking out during the day, David Icke was a guest on Coast to Coast AM, and he was on it for all 4 hours. And he wove a story so wild and so crazy, yet so logical. I mean, I had never heard of him, and it blew my fucking mind. I mean, I listened intently for 4 hours straight without even coming up for air, and came away with the idea from Black Ribbons, basically. I mean, I'll tell you some of his tales later in the series and all that, but for now, you know, that was the moment. But I also had a Blue Oyster Cult CD that was like a greatest hits with me in the car. And if you listen to that and you listen to the music on Black Ribbons, you would see that I was kind of stuck with David Icke and Blue Oyster Cult. It would honestly explain a lot of the sounds on the album for sure. But I became obsessed after that with reading every theory I came across, researching the occult and philosophy, theosophy, the Freemasons. You know, it blew my mind. Manly Hall, all these people, and I would read it and absorb it and like make an opinion on it. But there was this whole subculture that I hadn't been awakened to, and it was almost like when the door opened, you find it everywhere, and it was just what a great feeling, and it was inspiring, and you know, just. That's where Black Ribbons came from. Again, remember that Black Ribbons is fictional, and it features a fictional band called Hierophant that's known for their radical anti-imperialist songs. And this is my interpretation of a possible darker future where the Green Curtain has come down. And here's how I got there. Wake Up is the tune that introduces us to Hierophant. It's really their anthem. They don't believe in the lies. They don't believe in the separation. As a wiser man than me said, this whole thing about the transgender bathrooms and the fighting about it, it's just something they throw out here for all of us to fight each other with. It weakens us as a whole. That's just it's just that much easier for them to push their message down our throat when we're all fighting with each other. And you got to look at all the political elections and all the things that are probably going on behind that curtain that are getting covered up, you know, by all of the fighting over the elections and everything like that, you know. We don't believe your bullshit, and we don't do what you want us to do. And that's what this is about. And that's what Hierophant is about. In William Cooper's Behold a Pale Horse, he illustrates the way that the government system is put into place to keep the lower class as uneducated, working multiple jobs, and unable to work their way up to the middle class, if there even is a middle class to be had, which at the moment there is not. Mom and dad both have to work. These kids end up in government-connected daycare centers, poorly educated through public schooling, and for the most part kicked out onto the street to find out for themselves what life is really all about, you know? A structure that is eerily similar to the way medieval lords kept the lowly peasants uneducated so they could be more easy to control. You know what I'm saying? You can try to send a big message here or there that anybody can be anything that they want, but you try telling that to a kid who doesn't really have a home to go home to. As quoted from The Story of Civilization, Part 3, Caesar and Christ, Will Durant wrote, "A great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself within." This says it all. Yes, the government is covering up a lot. Yes, they are trying to weaken society as a whole to remain in absolute power. Yes, the political elections are rigged and these people's power is an illusion. But, yes, the people still can be heard. With the implementation of the internet, we are being heard louder than ever. Other decentralized technologies are popping up and stealing the power away from corporations one at a time. The times are getting better, despite the tighter grip that corruption has on us all. Have you ever heard of the Franklin scandal? It's something that I'm not supposed to talk about because so many people have disappeared who've started digging into this. It's that bad, apparently. And I'm not going to go digging deep into this because it's not that important to me. And honestly, it's just shrouded in disgrace. But to give you some context, it was a child prostitution ring involving a lot of young boys that were being provided as sex slaves to Washington, D.C. for some of these most powerful and famous high-profile politicians to use at these insane parties. How insane? Like, think Eyes Wide Shut without the beautiful house or the hot chicks and the cool music. Try some slimy DC penthouse with a bunch of fat middle-aged pedophiles getting all Caligula to Huey Lewis in the news with these children. And these poor kids. I mean, anyone who investigates or writes about it drops dead. This shit is true, people. It's terrible. But if you look at what happens behind closed doors, this crazy shit gets exposed all the time. But you're never likely to even hear about it because you're more busy wrapped up about Hillary and Trump and what's going on behind closed doors there, you know? You know, occasionally you hear about it. How about Ariel Castro? This is pure evil, and it is out there, folks. And evil wants power, and evil wants money. So why is it so hard to believe that most of the richest people on Earth are most likely evil? There are two quotes that fit really well here, ladies and gentlemen, and not in a good way. Lord Acton famously said that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men. Oftentimes people leave off that second line, but I find it just as jarring as the first half of the quote. Also, Meyer Rothschild's credited as being the founding father of international finance and the founder of the wealthiest family in human history, glibly said, "Give me control over a nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws." This is all that matters to people in power, and this is also why I believe in Bitcoin, because it has the power to take that away from people like the Rothschilds. But I won't go down that rabbit hole right now. Money corrupts, evil eats good and evil. That's how this works. Winter is coming, you get it. I'm sure most of you already know about the Bilderberg Group. It's become pretty like common lingo, along with all the Jay-Z's and the Illuminati and that kind of business that has spread misinformation about all of this stuff and kind of made it all seem like a cartoon, which it kind of is. And the Bilderberg Group is one thing all into itself. You know, you can go to WikiLeaks right now and you can search through all of Hillary Clinton's emails and find plenty of stuff on the Bilderberg Group. I know this because Adam Barnes, my manager, did it and went into an internet K-hole the other night on WikiLeaks. God bless WikiLeaks. I mean, they put it all out there right in front of us. And still, most of us don't even take the time to read it. Do you know that Julian Assange has an insurance file, a massively large file of stuff that he says if he dies, it's going to be released? And this stuff is stuff that gives him bargaining power for the governments not to kill him. I want to read what's in there. Don't you? I run a BBS, which is an old school bulletin board service, and I won't get into that nerdy stuff right away either, but if you guys want to tune in for more information about Black Ribbons and the release, along with a lot of cool radio archives I have and stuff, you can go to my bulletin board at bitsunrise.com. But I digress. I'm sure most of us don't even want to see that stuff, because I mean, it's pretty frightening when you realize that there are so many crimes going on in the government, and they're really hurting people. But, you know, maybe we're like those fainting goats you find yourself looking at after you fall into a YouTube rabbit hole. Who knows? We see the truth, and we just fall down and ignore it. This is why they call us sheep. But if we want to really wake up, we got to learn how to read the signs that are all around us. Once you start seeing them, you'll never be able to unsee it. Once you realize how much the media, like where, trace the money between advertising companies and corporations and the channels and the news we get and the direction that it seems that it's pointing, and trace the money. It's all behind the money. And it's crazy that it's all behind the money because, you know, love is the only truth. It's the only thing you can take with you after you go. And I'll tell you what, I'm just damn tired of it. I love walking through these things, you know. I want you guys to hear kind of how my mind operated, and I sometimes am going to jump around and maybe get a little confusing, but try and follow me. We're going to move into part two of this episode. Triskaidekaphobia. When I check in at 1410, I know what room I'm really in tonight. From a room coming down the hall, take me back to a place that I can't recall in my mind. The jackal of hearts will break me. Makes me feel like Judas, baby. Does he ever look through your mind? The jackal of hearts is aching, silent like a fucus, baby.
It's the usual thing in politics. Tell them what they want to hear, get into power, do what you always intended to do.
We interrupt this film to tell you we are getting reports that Diana, Princess of Wales, has been badly injured in a car crash in France.
Put a number 13 tattooed on my neck. Her ink starts to itch like going turn to red.
And now we move to part two of this episode, Triskaidekaphobia. Triskaidekaphobia is the fear of the number 13, the fear of dates with 13 in them. According to several sources, it stems from Judas being the 13th at the Last Supper of Jesus and betraying him and all. According to the Hammurabi theory, it is from the Babylonian Code of Hammurabi. The 13th law is always omitted. Loki was the 13th god in Viking culture. Apollo 13. Friday the 13th, going all the way back to the Knights Templar. It's echoed through time. You can find all that on Wikipedia. I basically did, but that wasn't where the title came from for me. The concept of there really being 13 months. The song references a Fucus, which is the lost constellation. That concept, which basically throws off basic astrology and paints a vastly different numerical position of existence, I found it pretty enamoring and like a recalibration. Even if it's really how I'm perceiving it that's wrong, what I picked up from it was just a thought that I thought, man, what if everything we've done has been tuned to 12, but it's really built on 13? What is that all about? A fucus, or the serpent bearer, falls from around November 29th until December 18th. It infatuated me, even in fantasy, to imagine a silent constellation quietly affecting all water life. I mean, you must believe the universe does affect us all. Every one of us has our place on the planet, our place in space. We have a worth or a weight that affects the rest of humanity. And, you know, to me, I just wanted to research all of this. In Greek mythology, Zeus threw a giant thunderbolt at Ephucus, striking him down out of jealousy. Ephucus had the ability to unite the world, heal the sick, and give them immortality. And Zeus wanted no part of that for the little people, much like pharmaceutical companies do with cures for diseases, or giant assholes who just want to profit off the cure for AIDS and jack the price. Looking at you, Martin Shkreli. According to sieveoftruth.wordpress.com, that's sieveoftruth.wordpress.com, the author Sinan Gil Sinan suggests that the symbol for a fucus, which is much like the symbol for doctors with the snake wrapped around the staff, it also looks like DNA strands. Interesting. Think about that. DNA strands have been in the art of the ancestors for all those years. Huh. Sinan writes, I believe that DNA is not of this world, but was transplanted to this world. I personally believe that when the axial precession allows our sun and earth to conjunct the dark rift in Ephucus on the winter solstice of December 21st, then the DNA of life on this planet upgrades. Another pet theory of mine is that the DNA shift on this alignment will allow our pineal gland, as part of our third eye, to be able to produce melatonin whilst awake. Therefore, we will be able to live and inhabit a dream state, like the Aborigines and the Hopi people believed. This would effectively make us seem to disappear to the people whose third eyes have not awakened. They would seem to be left behind in the third dimension and would perish with the dying fourth world civilization. What Sinan writes sounds a lot like the idea of the rapture. You know the rapture, about how everyone who believes in God is going to disappear and go into the Lord's kingdom before he rains down fire and kills all the rest of the people. Because he is a jealous God, you know. And, you know, there's two things going on here in this whole statement I just read. But
let's go with the first part of this, and then let's apply it to a fucus for a moment. The DNA being brought here by another world, that goes along with a lot of the Sumerian texts where they believe that before the first civilization that a certain planet came into rotation near our planet, and these reptilian aliens came down and modified human civilization, or bred with, depending on what you read, bred with human civilization, and caused us to be like us now, humans, what they are, eventually through evolution. So we're created by these other creatures, or are in their likeness. Either way, that is a wild concept. You've got Zeus, who was jealous of Fucus and struck him down. And see, this is where you see the government, how they like oppress the real message with fake media. They want to keep everyone divided so that they can remain in absolute power. That's the same as the Zeus story. That relates to the Fucus story. And Fucus was the one that could heal the world and unite them in happiness and really take the power away from the gods. It was the decentralized god. It was the god that was going to let everyone do everything and not have, be happy, bring health to the world. And the big powers wanted it out, And then again, this brings up this other hidden, like there's really a hidden resource out there that really, it's just water. Everything can be run by water. Water is all you need to create life and make it happen. It interacts with the DNA. Maybe that's it. There are just many stories of all these kind of hidden ways that we could be united and be cool, but they keep those down to keep us weak so that they can keep control over us. And all we can do is revolt. And that's what we're doing. But if you even take the other concept brought here about DNA and aliens and the concept that DNA is this amazing technology that was brought to us by an advanced civilization millions of years ago or whenever, and it's been in the artwork the whole time over the ages. I mean, that is a mind-blowing concept. That is saying that reptiles came from outer space and they connected with us at some point or created us here, and we're some petri dish. I mean, if you want to get a little crazy with this concept for just a minute, and then I'm going to go into another story that inspired this, that ties into all of this. Culture is easily controlled in certain areas. I've had a theory for a while that the government is actually using the media with the terror bombs. Okay, they're blowing, they're the ones who are funding this. They want people afraid. They want people to go inside and use their computer, because when you're on the internet, you're more easily controlled by people in their pocket, like Facebook. Facebook is definitely in the pocket of the big money corporations, the evil people, the evil money, evil eating, good eating monsters. Do you know what I'm saying? And Facebook is a lot easier way for them to control you. So you want people not to go outside. If you look beyond your phone and your television, you'll see people in love. You'll see people having a wonderful time. You won't see fear. You won't see anger. But if you look on your TV and you look on your phone, it's all anger. It's people, just terrible stories about murder and sex and death and betrayal, and it makes you not want to go outside. It makes you want to live on the internet. But right now they've got their upper hand over all of us with these corporations. But soon the decentralized Facebook, the decentralized Twitter, the communications device that no one is in charge of, that will be there. And yes, there will be bad things. There will always be bad things, but the good things will be able to come out. So back to the aliens, okay? Like, aliens coming. We're going to get into this a little more because David Icke and his reptiles theory ties into this a lot, but we're not going to do that right now. We're going to go in another direction right now. We're going to talk about the Book of Enoch. It's the hidden book of the Bible. It's the Fucus of the Bible, okay? There's a great book called Gateway to the Gods by Craig Hines and delves mostly into the Book of Enoch, which was the forbidden book from the Bible. They took it out of the Bible. Enoch was the only person in the Bible to not die before being translated to heaven. That's what they call it, translating. He came over and went to heaven without death. He didn't have to experience it. It was his gift. It talks about names a lot in the book of Enoch and about picking new names. I guess when you translate over into heaven, you pick a new name, a new title. You're not the same old person anymore. He became Metatron. I used this analogy a lot with my album from 2013 called The Other Life. That album had a lot of Metatron references and sacred geometry and references to the Metatron cube and the Tree of Life and the Flower of Life. All that stuff is very interesting, and I didn't mean to get off on a tangent there, but the book Gateway to the Gods delves mostly into the Book of Enoch. And when he crossed over and he became Metatron, he became the angel. His hair went white. There's much about this concept of when they are translated into heaven after death, their hair goes white. Some even seems to feel like their hair went white upon delivery into heaven, as if it was burned high and hard and bright. There's a lot in this book about the concept of Nephilims, but also in the Bible, from the book of Daniel. And because the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from the heaven and saying, "Chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field, and let him be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field, till 7 periods of time pass him over." The watchers were angels sent to watch over us. That's what they called them all the time. They appeared to have white flowing hair and this bright appearance. But some of the angels slept with the earth women, and they gave birth to Nephilims that were giants. They lived among men, half angel and half human, and they were huge and ugly. I kind of imagined them like giant dysmorphia Game of Thrones giants. I don't know why, that's how my mind sees them, but this concept is quite infatuating. And that these Nephilim is why God made the flood happen. And the whole Noah and the animals thing on a big ass boat, he was trying to kill off all the giants. And he figured, well, we'll take a man and a woman and a bunch of animals and we'll take them to new civilization and start over. No matter what religion or not that you prescribe to, every ancient civilization has a flood story. It's worth noting this. They are too similar, and they are everywhere. But God didn't want to start all over. I mean, it took billions of years to get evolution, dinosaurs, asteroids, Hank Williams Jr. But he had to get rid of the damn Nephilims, because he knew that Lucifer motherfucker was up to no good, and he was going to have to kick him and all of his smelly, sweaty David Allan Coe shirt-wearing friends out of his town. And so he did, and they all died, or at least they were thought to have been killed. But there was also the concept that heaven was actually interdimensional travel, and the angels were crossing through stargates and all these massive temples all around the world that are still there, and that their hair went all white when they crossed through the dimensions, and they got a new name, same shit happens, if you're good, you die too. Everyone crosses through into this other dimension, but yet Enoch was the first to cross over. So what if they are stargates? What if this is that futuristic civilization that exists in a fourth dimension and brought DNA here to complete the puzzle of getting this generation over to the next dimension? Going back to what our friend Gil Saban said, it was just one of those things. It was too deniable that DNA has existed at least as a thing and a technology all of this time through history, and we're just figuring it out in our civilization. Who knows who's crossed over before? Who knows what is really happening? A lot of these things, we talk about them and they sound wild and unbelievable, but what if there is a fourth dimension where there are people who can view us but we can't view them, and how that all works? It's pretty wild. It's really scientific, and you know, black holes are still unexplained. Anyway, all of this was really extremely fascinating to me. A fucus comes around even more if you dig into it further than we've discussed. But numbers are the thing here. Numbers are extremely important. They drive the whole picture. And as we're improving technology with numbers, with things like Bitcoin and these developments that take the third party out of money transactions, I mean, it's a big deal. It's like we're starting to take the power away, and it's all about numbers. Another thing about this song that I mention from the album is Room 1408, which is, of course, a Stephen King story that was made into a film. As you'll find through the lyrics of the album Black Ribbons, I will make direct nods to titles of Stephen King stories or other things from Stephen King stories. I'm a big Stephen King fan, obviously, and having him speak on this album was really wild. And at the very, very end of the series, I'm going to have a whole part dedicated to Stephen King. But anyway, numbers, the randomness of the world is not so random if you look at it. But we are in a series of random actions executing en masse at lightning speed, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. WFO. Wide fucking open, if you were so inclined to say. I have a buddy that always says 24/7 WFO, which is kind of how I like to look at it. I'm wide fucking open. As we wind down the final part of this episode, discussing the song Triskaidekaphobia, there are references to the Jack of Diamonds and the King of Hearts. These were fairly obvious references to John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King, both beloved by the people and shot down in their prime. However, Diana made a center stage appearance in the song. The Queen of Hearts. I had become obsessed with the tale that I like to call Princess Diana and Black Isis. The Queen Mother comes from a certain bloodline. Which bloodline, you ask? I think you can guess. We've already touched on it a little bit, and we'll continue to touch on it as the series goes on. A reptilian bloodline of evil. This could have come from, let's believe, pre-Sumerian times when an alien race came from another planet. Their race was dying. They needed to occupy a new place, so they came to Earth and started a reptilian bloodline with the people of Earth. Now, these reptilians have stayed in power, an absolute power, by doing what they need to keep that the case. She also comes from a long line of secret societies, ones that feast on children, sacrifice and abuse others in the most hedonistic of ways. Very similar to the Franklin scandal that I brought up at the beginning of this episode. Ah, love when things come full circle. But just watch, they're about to get even more crazy full circle. The goddess Diana in mythology was the goddess of the moon and the hunt. Much of Princess Diana and Goddess Diana's attributes were the same. They were loving, fruitful, kind, and happy people, and much beloved by the people. Princess Di was someone the world worshipped. She was an honorable goddess, healing the world with her smile. Named England's Rose, she represented hope, and she was killed in a car chase involving the paparazzi. It's important to note that Princess Diana, with all of her notable charity work and all the world healing and bringing together that she did, she sounds an awful lot like a fucus from the mythology surrounding a fucus and Zeus. And much like Zeus taking a thunderbolt and striking down a fucus, the evil queen struck down and killed her daughter-in-law to keep her own blood magic powerful. The tunnel itself was called the Soul Bridge, or the Bridge of the Soul when translated to English. It was notably a place where pagan rituals took place. The Queen Mother is Black Isis. A sacrifice of blood and death must be made. Diana was the sacrifice of the moon for the queen to remain in power, to take back the fear of the public, and to live on through her bloodline. The reptilian bloodlines go way back. The Rothschilds are also reptiles. Again, we're suspending our skepticism. These tales are as if every word is true. The picture I'm painting is that of possibility, not probability. but the queen needs her sacrifice in the Age of Horus. There were even specifications historically of when the pagan groups would sacrifice at that exact location of her death, specifications for what were needed to reach the gods, and they were all in that place at that time, when she died. There's suspicions that basically Diana was drugged, placed in a car, and sent to her death. There were a lot of different people in on it, too. I read most of my research back when I was making the album off the internet. And funny enough, most of the books and articles I read back then are gone now. It brings to mind the Mandela Effect. If you're not aware of this phenomenon, pause, Google it now, and get ready to lose some time. There's one blog in particular that there's absolutely no trace of. I cannot find it. I have tried so hard. I remember looking every single day, many times a day. This guy posted some of the most fascinating yet strong material about resistance to the forces of imperial oppression. And then all of a sudden, one day, he just stops writing. I can't find the old blog to save my life. But I don't remember the URL either. I remember A War of Illusion was in the title. I'm searching through my notes as I go along making these episodes of Beyond the Black, but I still have not found it. If someone out there can find it on the Wayback Machine or something, send me an email at shooter@beyondthe.black. shooter@beyondthe.black. We've still got a lot of episodes to go, and we're just getting started. Anyways, Diana. Yes, so she really was sacrificed in this blood magic pagan ritual for the queen. Diana was primed as the goddess of love to be killed for evil. Christine Fitzgerald said Diana used to tell her that the queen was evil and that she hated the queen and the queen hated her. There are numerous accounts of people saying that the queen has killed children and innocents in horrific acts of violence. Are they true? I can't say, but I'm going to believe it so I can be prepared if it's true. Red, are you out there tonight? I know Red is listening to this, and he's saying right now, "That's right, motherfuckers. Come and try and kill me. I'll fight you all the way down, motherfucker. Yeah, that's what I got, a red dot tattooed on the black of my fucking head, man." Shoot. Well, that's about it for the first episode of Beyond the Black. I hope you enjoyed listening to me ramble on along the wild roads I'm leading you down. I'm proud to be doing this, and remember that Black Ribbons is going to be re-released on Election Day 2016 in an all-new Ultimate All-Inclusive Package. It'll come with two remastered vinyls, one CD with the album on it, another CD with outtakes, B-sides, previously unheard instrumentals, material from the Black Ribbons sessions, and from the live shows we did on the USB that we sold at one point. That's all going to be on these CDs with downloads as well. You can find out more information by going to the Black Country Rock website at bcrmedia.com or shooterjennings.com, as well as the Beyond the Black website for more information on upcoming shows and schedules, beyondthe.black. Beyond the Black was written and produced by Shooter Jennings and Brad Jewell. It's a production of Black Country Rock in association with J&J Productions. Until next episode, don't let them get you down.
Insecure transmission. Stay tuned for future messages. Everything is illusion.